He's played many roles as an actor over the years, everything from Shakespeare to Lerner and Lowe. The general in the film Babette's Feast is a character he could have taken to heart, a role that might have been written for him to play. We learn in the story that General Löwenheim left behind the love of his life in a small Danish village, and he went off to do his duty in the military, where he had a successful career. And yet, deep down, he never forgot his true love. When, many years later, the general returns to his village, his home, he meets again the woman he has loved so truly all those years. And when, at a banquet, it falls to him to offer a toast, he says these words about what he has learned about life. Mercy and truth, my friends, have met together. Righteousness and bliss shall kiss one another. Man, in his weakness and short-sightedness, believes he must make choices in this life. He trembles at the risks he takes. We do know fear. But no, our choice is of no importance. There comes a time when our eyes are opened and we come to realize that mercy is infinite. We need only await it with confidence and receive it with gratitude. Mercy imposes no conditions, and lo, everything we have chosen has been granted to us, and everything we rejected has also been granted. Yes, we even get back what we rejected. For mercy and truth are met together, and righteousness and bliss shall kiss one another. General Löwenhelm's speech from Babette's Feast, a novella by Isaac Dinesen that became a much-loved film, quoted by Fire and Rose. We're about to hear a story told by northeastern Pennsylvania native Frank Shiner that illustrates in a strong way the general's wisdom and why Frank Shiner would be a grand general if the story ever came to the stage. He could pronounce with depth these words, "Everything we have chosen has been granted to us, and everything we left behind has been granted to us. Yes, we even get back what we left behind." Frank Shiner was born and raised here in northeastern Pennsylvania, and he went on to build a promising theater career in New York. Life intervened, though, and he left his passion for performing behind and established a successful business career and was blessed with a loving and devoted family. But now, all these years later, what he left behind has been, in the general's words, granted. Yes, he's even gotten back what he left behind. Tomorrow, Friday, May 19th, marks the official release of Frank Shiner's second album, titled Lonely Town, Lonely Street.
You can walk alone on a crowded street. But the city really ain't no bigger, no bigger than the friendly people that you meet.
The album Lonely Town, Lonely Street was produced by Jay Newland, a 10-time Grammy winner who is known for his work with Nora Jones, Gregory Porter, Richie Havens, and many other luminaries, and features an A-list of musicians who've played with Sheryl Crow, Willie Nelson, Roberta Flack, Whitney Houston, Paul Simon, Jeff Beck, The Rolling Stones, Aretha Franklin, Carole King, and so many others. We just imagined that Frank Shiner could have played the general in a much-loved film, as if the role were written for him. Frank tells us, as he sings this song by Doc Pomus, that it's as if Doc Pomus wrote the song for him.
No one ever saw or wanted to see the real me. I was hiding and sometimes sliding from the real me.
The Real Me is the title tune of Frank Shiner's first CD, issued in 2014 to great critical acclaim. Since its release, Frank has been able to perform in a number of popular clubs which have great cachet, Feinstein's 54 Below in New York, and he'll be back there on July 8th, and The Cutting Room among them. But as we're about to hear, the life lessons that shaped, that formed the real Frank Shiner were learned here in northeastern Pennsylvania. In the first part of a two-part conversation, we learn about Frank Shiner's ties to northeastern Pennsylvania.
I am the child of Lebanese immigrants. We've always been very proud of our heritage. My father had 11 children in his family, and tragically, he lost his parents when he was only 13 years old in a car accident out in Loyalville, Pennsylvania, and he was in the accident with them. You know, those were the days when they didn't have therapists and psychologists for kids, but you know, my father just, they found him out on the road, covered in blood, and they did not know how long he had been there. His leg was shattered, his ankle, and it had to be rebroken and reset a year later. And he decided he was going to make his parents proud, and he worked the farm because he had his older brothers away to war. He had one younger brother at home and his sisters who ran the household. So he planted the crops, picked the crops, sold them at market, and raised a family at 14 years old. All the while staying in high school, got honors academically, played basketball, played trumpet, and he had a full paid scholarship for chemistry to go to college, and he turned it down to stay home and raise his family. When you come from a legacy like that and an example like that, surely you could never live up to it, but you die trying. And he is representative, he's one representative of what I have seen in the Wyoming Valley and Mountaintop and that whole area, people from the greatest generation, and it's named that for a reason, who nothing was too much for, and they would sacrifice of themselves for others always. And those are the lessons we learned. How could you possibly forget an area like that? I have to believe it's unique in the country as I travel around. It, you know, a valley with a heart, and it truly is, and it's a big heart. So, you know, that's what you come from, and you never forget it.
And when you tell that story, Frank, it is a lesson that you have taken to heart. Clearly, you had gifts and talents. You went out and made a mark in the world. But when you had to make a decision, a key decision, you made that decision to step aside, to step back, not knowing that anything would happen that would bring you back to the very beginning. And we'll get to that story if you don't mind, but I wanted to ask you then, you were in high school musicals as well? Tell us about My Fair Lady.
Well, yeah, you know the name of it even. I was in the seasonal singers and all the choral groups. And then one day I was in the music room, and the band was playing, regular house band, and the horns were playing, and I didn't actually play an instrument other than playing around on the piano a little bit. But I was improvising, making kind of my mouth band, making horn sounds. And the band leader there said, come over here and do that. And he's telling the guys, this is how you should improvise. So I'm making horn sounds with my mouth and improvising. And we're having a ball. And the sister came in who was the director of the place. And I was a junior then. And she said, I want you to come and try out for the play. And I said, oh, I don't know. And I hemmed and hawed. Well, I went to the audition for My Fair Lady, and I was nervous. I've never been that nervous since. And I got up for the audition. I tried to chicken out first, and she said, Frank Shiner, and I said, no. And she said, Francis Shiner. That's when she meant business, when she said Francis. And she called me up onto the stage, so I stuttered through it. She said, try it again, and I stuttered a little less the next time. try it again. Now I'm starting to ham it up. And I really had a great time, and I never thought about it again until I got a letter that summer saying that I got the lead and it's time to start rehearsals.
Henry Higgins?
Henry Higgins I played in My Fair Lady, and I will never forget it. It was, I'll never forget that feeling in front of a live audience and feeling like you were moving people in some way. That was just an incredible feeling, and that's when I got bit by the bug. That was it.
It's interesting, isn't it, Frank, that the thing that we often remember is the rain in Spain and the care Henry Higgins is taking with the language. And that has stayed with you from there to Shakespeare at King's and right up to your singing now. You care about those lyrics, don't you?
I care about the lyrics more than anything first. It's lyric first. The song's got to touch me. And that song... Each song is an entire Shakespearean play. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's a story. And if you're not telling a story, if you're just doing it for pretty sounds, it will fall flat for people. It's not just about pretty sounds. The pretty sounds are the bonus.
So you have taken that experience, that grounding, not just in high school theater, but then you went on to King's and you switched to a theater major?
Well, I went in as a government pre-law major, and I knew I wasn't the best student in the world in high school, and I knew I needed to learn how to study. So I took three classes in the summer before I entered as a freshman, you know, full credit classes, so that I could take a light load when I got there. I don't know how I had the presence of mind at that young age to do it, but I knew that I couldn't take a full course load. So I took three courses, and then I took a little bit lighter load my freshman year, and it was pre-law and government, and once I got into the actual school for freshman year, within 1 month, I was absolutely miserable. There's just no other way to put it. I was miserable. I just hated it. And I went to the guidance counselor's office, and I said exactly that. I said, I'm in pre-law, and I'm absolutely miserable. And he said, well, Frank, I could tell you now, if you hate it now, first semester of your freshman year, you're never going to make it through law school. He said, I can't give you any advice, but go where your heart tells you to go. And that was it. I knew what he meant, and I stood up, and I smiled, and I said, thank you very much, and I shook his hand, and I walked out of his office, and I walked right down the hallway, and I made it right into the theater professor's office, Carl Wagner, and I said, I want to change my major, and that's when it happened.
So you did everything from Shakespeare to contemporary pieces, comedies, dramas, the whole works.
The whole works under Carl and Gerald Godwin, of course. What a department it was and is. It was so nurturing. And, you know, later on, as you know, I went into business, and I tell everybody who will listen that I learned more about business and moving people and influencing people and presentational skills from my experience as a theater major at King's College than I ever learned in any business course.
And it has to do with understanding people and telling stories?
It's, you know, a great acting instructor. It was one of them. It was either Carl Wagner or Gerald Godwin, but either one of them would have agreed, even though they had very different techniques, they would have agreed that acting is not acting. Acting is reacting. A good actor reacts. And I've learned that in business, if you read people and you read their motivations and you read what they need, you know exactly what to say to influence them and to move them and how to couch a phrase in such a way that it hits them and they don't even know why. And that's the power of communication. And that's what I learned at King's College, which has, I mean, it has seeped into every relationship that I've had in my life, including raising children. You listen to your child and you react to what their needs are. You understand that maybe if they snapped at you, it might be out of an insecurity. It might be out of something else that's bothering them. You read that. It gives you an insight, and it takes your relationships to a higher level with everybody because you're listening. And that's the key to good acting, but that's the key to life, isn't it?
Tell us then, you finished at King's, and you went off, and you were able to develop a theater career in New York, actually.
Well, I was fortunate to... You say fortunate. What you think is not good fortune usually ends up being good fortune. I lived at a place called the Leo House. It was a hospice for religious travelers. It was through a friend of a friend. And I ended up working there from midnight to late in the morning, running the manual elevator and taking the nuns up and down to chapel in the morning. You know, I took calls from all over the world. I mean, people making reservations from Japan in the middle of the night. But this place had a very long L-shaped marble countertop or granite countertop. And I used to lay out my pictures and resumes by the hundreds across this countertop, you know, batches of them, and put them in large manila envelopes and have a spray bottle so I don't have to lick the envelopes. I sprayed the lip, the flap of the envelope, and I ran it like a business. And I would send out these pictures and resumes. Well, I got agents, and I ended up doing soap operas, and I had recurring roles on soaps, and I did musicals. And then I got into a David Mamet play and got my equity card. I got equity, AFTRA, and SAG. SAG and AFTRA are one now, but I got equity, AFTRA, and SAG within a couple of years of being there, and I've kept them all these years. I still have them. And I was working quite a bit, but I also fell in love. So I met the love of my life, and within 2 years of being in New York, we were getting married. And long story short, we started having children, and there I was out of town, and she was home alone with a baby, and I was making equity union wages, $145 a week. A week. And I was doing a musical that Garth Brooks was writing the music for. And Garth was a star, but he wasn't a super, super star yet. And it got a lot of press, and I was out of town in Boston, and we got reviewed by the Boston Globe and Time Magazine, and they were making T-shirts up, and there were investors coming in because Garth Brooks was involved. And that year, Garth Brooks won the Horizon Award. And of course, no fault of his own, his schedule changed. He had to go on tour, and he had to drop out of the project, and the project died. And they were saying this was going to Broadway, and I was going to originate the role on Broadway. And it was, so we were all very excited, and then the carpet got pulled out from underneath it. And then, right around that time, I found out our second child was on the way. So now I'm faced with the choice, and I looked at my dad, and I thought, what would my dad do? Well, I already knew what my dad would do. I already told you that story. My father dropped everything at 14 years old to help his family of 11 on a farm so they didn't lose the farm. What could I possibly do? It was a small step for me to stop my dream or put my dream on the back burner and raise my family. I never looked back. That's what you learn in the valley, though. That's how people operate there.
And the story gets even more dramatic in that you have a wonderful life, you make a career in business as you suggested you do, but then there's another blow of fate.
Life throws us curveballs, you know? Yeah, there I was, had forgotten about ever following a dream or a career. At least I thought I forgot about it. And my wife, Suzanne, was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. And it's, you know, the most aggressive form of breast cancer. It's less than 5%. And if it gets out, it's considered stage 4 instantly. So we're scared to death, of course. Now, at this point, we have 3 children. My daughter was only 10 years old. My boys were a little older. And this is 7 years ago, almost 8 years ago. And she was going through chemo and radiation and, I mean, necrosis of the skin and MRSA infections and 12 surgeries. It was literally hell. And we were coming back from chemo one day, and she was in her wig. She had already lost her hair at this point. And my daughter was hungry, and I was hungry. And she said, let's just stop off at the first place we see. And we pulled in at a restaurant. And they happened to be having an open mic night for all musicians, but including singers. Suzanne went up to the counter and wrote my name on the sheet. I said, what are you doing? She said, I want you to sing me a song. I haven't sung in front of people in 10 years, maybe 12 years, whatever it was. I said, I'm not doing it. And she said, oh, yes, you are. I said, no, I'm not doing it. And she welled up with tears, and she pulled her wig back and exposed her bald head, and she said, this would give me great joy. I've been through hell, and I want you to, well, how do you argue with this, right? So I got up and sang a song to her and for her, and it went very well. And the band leader said, do you have another one? And yes. And well, do you have another one? I'm on my third song now. And only because I ran out of lyrics did I stop. And I said, good night. And we were leaving the restaurant, and I heard him say on the microphone, we're going to take a break. And he came running out, and he said, you know, what do you do? Do you do it? Where do you sing? And I said, no, I'm a businessman. And he said, what the hell? He actually cursed in a positive way. And I had to shush him in front of my 10-year-old daughter. And he offered me a job with his orchestra to sing with them. And my wife and I went back and forth, and he had to come and talk to me for 3 months. He took me to lunch, and I kept saying no. Finally, my wife said, I want you to do it. And she said, we've learned that we could be ripped apart from each other at any moment. You need to do this now. And I want you to do it, and I want to participate. I want to enjoy this with you. And so I did. And I did a dinner dance every Saturday night for a couple of years with sometimes new musicians each time. And I got to do the whole Great American Songbook and dance music. And I got to develop my style again. I got to develop my vocal cords again and enjoy performing. And that's what brought it back. And one night, the manager was there. And he said, we should work together. And here we are today on the second album. I mean, God works in your life. Call it God, call it fate, whatever it is. If you're open to it, it will come your way. It's just you got to read the signs.
And you have to have love in your life, like Suzanne, who would say, Frank, you need to do this. She knew what was in your heart, and she knew what sacrifices you had made to make your lives together, and that's an extraordinary gift, selflessness on her part.
She is extraordinarily selfless, and she is also very good at reading people. It's funny, actors, she's an actress too, we read others sometimes better than we read ourselves, and she was certainly reading me better than I was reading myself.
It's so nice that you're preparing to return home to the Wyoming Valley for another CD release event and signing at Barnes & Noble at the Arena Hub Plaza in Wilkes-Barre Township. And I know the last time you did that for your first album, you had a reunion with your theater professor and mentor from King's College, Carl Wagner, and he plans to see you again this time.
Carl wrote to me a couple of weeks ago, and he just said, Frank, I just want to let you know I've been following what you're doing, and it just makes me so happy for you, and so on and so forth. And it was just a beautiful little note, and I wrote back to him. I said, Carl, I want you to understand something. You didn't only direct me in college. Your lessons have literally directed my life. Whether I'm giving a toast at a wedding, or whether I'm singing a song, or whether I'm playing a role, or getting up and making a speech in front of a business conference, I hear your words and your lessons direct me to today and throughout my life. And that's a fact.
And change my life the way you've done.
Frank Shiner, native of northeastern Pennsylvania and critically acclaimed vocalist, speaking with us in anticipation of the official release tomorrow, May 19th. The official release of his new CD, his second, Lonely Town, Lonely Street, from BDG Red, a Sony company.
You can live your life alone on a crowded street. But the city really ain't no bigger, no bigger.
This is the title tune from that new album, Lonely Town, Lonely Street. And as we've heard, Frank Shiner was shaped by his formative years here in the city of Wilkes-Barre and the greater Wyoming Valley. And he'll return home 1 week from today for a CD launch celebration at Barnes & Noble at the Arena Hub Plaza in Wilkes-Barre Township. That's at 6 o'clock. It's May 25th. There will be an acoustic performance and an album signing. For more information, on the web, frankshiner.com. frankshiner.com. That's Frank Shiner and a CD launch celebration at Barnes & Noble at the Arena Hub Plaza in Wilkes-Barre Township at 6 o'clock on May 25th, Thursday, May 25th, 1 week from today. There'll be an acoustic performance by Frank and an album signing. And for more information on the album and Frank's bio and videos and so much more, on the web, frankshiner.com, frankshiner.com. There will be a live performance by Frank Shiner May 20th, and that's this Saturday, at World Cafe Live in Philadelphia. That's where he'll be on the 20th of May at 8 p.m. World Cafe Live in Philadelphia. Then, on May 25th, as we just heard, at 6, he'll be here in the Wyoming Valley at Barnes & Noble at the Arena Hub Plaza with an acoustic performance and an album signing. And on July 8th, it's a full band performance. He'll be back at Feinstein's 54 Below in New York. For more information, on the web, frankshiner.com, frankshiner.com. And please tune in tomorrow for the second part of our conversation with Frank Shiner. He'll tell us all about this new CD and his sense of the songs.